From the home of the Codebreakers and the birthplace of modern computing, this is the Bletchley Park podcast. Welcome to part two of the September episode of the Bletchley Park podcast, the Veterans Reunion. This year's reunion was so packed with veterans keen to share their memories that we've had to split it into two parts, and this is part two. This time we'll bring you some of the longer conversations. The story of how the Government Code and Cipher School cracked Hitler's fiendishly complex codes and produced war-winning intelligence lives on in the memories of the people who worked there. They were, for the most part, a very young bunch, and many were away from home for the first time, so it's never just the work they remember. So let's take you back to a warm afternoon in September, somewhere in the Buckinghamshire countryside, to hear more memories from the veterans themselves.
You made my life so glamorous. You can't blame me for feeling amorous. Oh, it's wonderful, marvelous, that you should care for me.
Tell me who you are.
I'm Betty Turner.
And where did you work in the war?
I was a wireless operator, Morse code receiving, in Winslow in Buckinghamshire. I was in the RAF.
And what
joined?
What did that entail? What were you doing?
Oh, well, all these Morse code messages were coming through, and I was writing them all down in groups of five, four letters and one figure usually, and it would be passed on eventually at the end of your shift to the next person, and then next one, and it never, that space was always covered. You
and
never had.
You are resplendent with your medals here today.
Well,
what are they all for?
That's the RAFA. I belong to the RAFA, the RAF Association, as I'm with the RAF Association, which is the women's, and then of course my yearly badge, my badge that I show as I was in the Army, Air Force, and this is Bletchley Park 1 and that's Bletchley Park 1,
and that
I wasn't
beautiful.
Actually here at Bletchley Park. Yes, my neighbour insisted I apply for it, and that's my war medal.
That is
the World War II. World War II. I never know whether to put them on, but then I think, well, we don't know who these people are if we don't.
No, and you should wear them with pride as well.
Well, I'm a bit embarrassed sometimes. It's amazing how many young people have no idea about the colours of your medals and things, but I don't know about a lot of them.
No,
either.
No, but what do the colours mean? I don't know what the colours
well,
mean.
Well, this is the war medal. That's the only one that is the war medal, and there are the red, red and blue.
You should wear them with pride.
Well, yes, but where? I don't go anywhere. No.
Well, you're wearing them today, and that's great, isn't it?
So,
and you said you were obviously here last year.
Yes, it was very nice. Yeah.
You enjoy coming to these events?
Yes, lovely. I never know who I'm going to see. I always hope I'm going to meet somebody that I was stationed with, but it hasn't happened yet.
Maybe one day. So you're planning next year now already?
Well, I can't actually, because on April the 2nd, this year, I was told I have 6 months to live.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry.
Oh, don't worry about it. It's wonderful because I know what I can do now. I can prepare for this. prepare for that. I'm 93, going on 93. So I've had a wonderful life. I've got two lovely kids, and grandchildren and great-grandchildren, and I'm a happy person.
And coming here today.
Coming here is special. Yes. And they've even got a wheelchair for me, the first time I've sat in a wheelchair.
You don't really need that wheelchair, do you, or is it?
Well, I haven't done so far.
So it's actually quite a special event for you here today.
Then. Well, it is really, yes, yes. I don't know out a great deal. I do belong to the RAFA, but since I've been told I'm poorly, people are very... It's funny, because they... I don't like to go amongst them now, because they say,
yes.
You know, and it's a strange feeling. Personally, I wish I had not known. Because when pain starts, I think, uh-oh, the pain's coming. But what the heck? I've had a wonderful life.
Are you aiming for this next year?
Oh, because I shall aim for it, of course.
What is it about these events that you like coming to then?
Well, I'm always hoping to see somebody I know. And you'd be amazed how friendly everybody is. I don't know what it is that brings people together at a time like this. We remember what we went through, of course. And we can tell people, but honestly, they're not really interested.
Oh, they are interested, though.
Oh, I would say that's fine. But every once in a while, you see the eyes going in.
Most people are very interested in your stories. They are, because it's fascinating for us, because it was secret for such a long time, wasn't it?
I know. Well, I didn't know this place existed for years. No idea Bletchley Park existed. I was divorced after 25 years. My daughter and I, my two daughters and I came. We were living in the States at the time. We came back here to live. And I started hearing about Bletchley Park, never took very much notice. But then I met a fellow at a dance. He was coming to Bletchley Park for this lecture for a few days. And that was lovely. And he said they were studying all sorts of things, and it was all signals. And I say, Bletchley Park, what's that all about? You know? And this is years after I was out of the service. And then, of course, he was telling me about it. And it dawned on me that I better go out there and see what was about, walking around and seeing people in a crowd with a lady at the front. I joined up, find out. And I could hear this Morse code all the time. That's Morse code. What is that doing now, Because they'd already said Morse code was going to go out and it wasn't going to be used anymore. Then I decided, I've got to go again and see what's going on.
So it's brought people together, really.
Yes, and this is about the third time that I've come.
Oh, it's been a very good day. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Very
and
much
interview
nice.
For the BBC as well.
Yes. And this year it's been well organised, the whole thing.
Oh, lovely.
And the food on the count there, everything.
And where did you serve?
Hut 6.
You were in Hut 6?
I was in Hut 6. And I was typing from Morse code into the Enigma machine and getting the message out on the left and the message on the right in German. And it was just hectic. The main thing about it was that we all worked to death.
Yes.
First of all, I came here and it was wonderful. Lovely garden, lovely people, great atmosphere. It was wonderful. And I learned to do the job and the typing from Morse, and it was fine. As the pressure started to build up, it got to the stage when, just before D-Day, people were burning out. They really were.
Well, some of you had to go off and have rest, didn't you?
They had to go off and have 2 days rest with drugs and then go back and work again.
Yeah.
I mean, this was happening all around me, and I stuck it out until D-Day, and after D-Day, I just went home. And unfortunately, nobody knew what had happened, but I went home and the doctor put me straight in hospital.
Oh, really?
Yes. So I was 3 weeks in hospital, and my parents hadn't got the address of Bletchley Park.
Yeah.
They'd only got my Bedford address.
Oh.
So they wrote to Bedford, and Bletchley Park didn't know what had happened. They thought I'd done a runner. they really did. In the end, they just sent me my cards. They didn't send a thank you letter or anything. But I didn't care because I'd done my bit.
Yes, well, you definitely did, didn't you?
Absolutely. And I mean, I'd worked myself to a bone on it. Okay. It was worth it.
A bit more questions for you,
no, I just wanted to finish it off. So now we've sent you off on the right path, because I nearly sent you on the wrong path there. And you're going to go and look at a Typex shortly, aren't you?
Yes, that's right.
And what did you do with the Typex?
Well, I was working in a factory office, and the boss was a colonel, an old colonel. And he said, I think there's a job for you. And so I said, I don't want it, thank you. He said, it's for the foreign office. I said, I have no education much. Foreign office is not for me because I have no languages. He says, good. I wasn't winning. And he just said, will you go and have an IQ next door? And I had an IQ, came back, and he says, you've got the job and you're going. And I couldn't say no. I mean, I was had to go because I knew it was war work and important.
Yes.
So anyway, they put me on a train from Doncaster to where I lived, down to London, where somebody met me, put me in a car, took me around to Euston Station, and then a man met me again, another one, kept introducing themselves to me, and he says, come quickly because your train's in. And I said, what train? I've just come down by train. He says, no, he says, you're going up now, and get off at a place called Bletchley.
Which I bet you'd never heard of.
I'd never heard of it. And what's more, there was no station announcements in those days. There was no labels on.
No, they'd taken them all down, haven't they?
The announcements were very infrequent, but there was just somebody said Bletchley, and I thought, oh, that's it.
And then in here and signed the Official Secrets Act, I bet.
Well, in here, and I did the course to learn to type from Morse.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, because I had to start from scratch. I mean, I was a typist, but
it's different,
it took me a few weeks. There was about 30 girls in the group that went when I went, and within a week it was down to 20, and gradually for the next two or three weeks it was going down, and 10 of us came in to do Hut 6.
They kept the cream.
Well, that's rather a nice
thought.
That's rather a nice thought, but it had to be. We could do the job and we could do it steadily and not make mistakes, because one mistake and the whole message went corrupt.
Yeah.
It was very, 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 very brain work, really.
Yeah. And it was very hard-going. Important what you were doing.
Hard going. Well, this was the point. I pushed myself, particularly on the run-up to D-Day, and everybody else was the same in the department, because we knew what we were doing and we knew it mattered. As we were typing, we said, well, every message might just have one little bit of information that's going to help. It's going to be the one that cracks it.
And it could be, it was true. Saving lives.
It was true. Yeah, it was true. So, I mean, it was really hard work. But when they announced that it was D-Day, I took myself out from Bletchley and I got in the train and went back up to Doncaster home. And of course, the first thing, my mother hadn't seen me for nearly 2 years, because I didn't go home at all in between.
No.
And she hadn't seen me. And she said, I think the Foreign Office has tried to kill you. I don't know what they've done to you. But she said, I'm calling in the doctor. And the doctor came and put me straight into hospital. And I was in hospital for 3 weeks. During that time, they wrote to the Bedford address. So nobody told the Foreign Office why I'd left.
Mm.
So after 3 weeks, I got an envelope with my cards in. They just sacked me. First time I'd ever been sacked. But I didn't care. No. I thought, well, the war's over. I've done my bit. I'm here now. And I showed it to the people at the Labour Exchange, and they were, you know, grumble, grumble, grumble about what the Foreign Office had done. And I said, look, the war's over. We've stopped it. That's the big thing.
Yeah.
And that's all that matters. I said, I'm going to go and get married now.
Well, I'm glad you had a nice day today. Yeah. I'm glad you decided to come back, because it's always good to see veterans here, and it's good that we can share your stories with people around the world.
It was a memory of a period of hard work, but it was worth it.
Oh, it definitely
every
was.
Every bit.
Can I just say thank you for your service? Thank you so much.
It was just done. I was only young. I was 21 whilst I was here.
Bless you.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you had a good day.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Can you tell me who you are?
I'm Aileen Halstall.
And what did you do during the war?
I intercepted German encrypted messages. I didn't work at Bletchley Park. I worked at Bow Manor.
But you were still part of the whole...
I was part of it. I took down the messages in Morse code, transcribed them into letters of the alphabet, which formed the messages that came to Bletchley Park. They were sent by dispatch rider from Bow Manor and roundabout other stations to Bletchley Park. And when I applied for my
medal, yes,
I was accepted into Bletchley Park as part of their team, but I didn't actually work here.
How on earth did you get a job like that?
Well, you were called up for the forces, you see, when you got your time, and when you got to your units, where you were sort of segregated, if you like, you were given intelligence tests and you were sorted out for various jobs. And in my group, there were about six of us held back, and we were sent to London to do aptitude tests to see how we would accept Morse code. And that was how we were...
They decided what you were going to do.
That's how we got the job we were going to do,
And did you have any idea that you had an aptitude for Morse code?
No.
Had you ever come across it before?
No, never done Morse at all.
And where were you living before you became involved?
Well, I come from South Shields in the northeast, on the northeast coast, and I came to Northampton to get work when I was 16.
So it wasn't too far from home, really?
Well, plenty far from my real home.
Yes, plenty far, of
but
course, yes.
From Northampton it wasn't far. I went to Droitwich. I was called up into Droitwich.
Did you have a big family? Did you leave a big family behind?
Yeah, I'm the eldest of seven.
Wow, seven. Brothers, sisters, or...?
Both of them, yeah.
Both of them. And what were they doing while you were down here?
Well, they were younger than me, so some of them were still at school. But the boys, of course, when they became of age, were just called up. And my other two sisters were not called up at all.
And obviously the work you were doing, you couldn't talk about with them.
No.
Was that hard? That must have been hard growing up.
Well, you just ignored it completely because you had to sign the Official Secrets Act, and you just couldn't talk about it. I would have liked to have told my father about it. I would have loved to.
And you never said anything to him?
Nobody.
No. You're a good secret keeper. I'm not sure. I think I might have had to. Did you not feel, was there never a moment when you thought, I'm going to say something?
No, because you hadn't got to, and that was it. That was finished. You were told you would take this secret to the grave.
And so you've kept it all that time?
All that time.
And how did you do that? Did you just forget about it, try and pretend it didn't happen?
Didn't talk about it. If anybody asks you what you did, you just said you were a clerk or something like that.
And how did you find out you could talk about it again? Was that a relief? Or was
I heard it over the television. I was sitting watching the news, and I said to my husband, what are they talking about? Grief, we were never allowed to talk about this.
And your husband knew, did he?
He did know, because he was in the Navy and he did a similar thing himself. He just said to me one day, I know what you do, but we didn't discuss it at all.
It was just one of those things you understood and...
You can't talk about it. End of.
That seems very strange now, where everything is all over the internet and instant communication. I guess that's why some of the youngsters of today would never be able to do that job, would never be able to keep the secret. And have you talked, you've obviously talked about it subsequently with your family.
Well, they think it's wonderful, but I mean, it was only a job, really, when you were doing it.
But it was a significant part of the war effort.
I presume, yes. Yeah. We were told another time, you were told nothing nothing at all. But we were told an odd time that, you know, somebody had taken a message that had been effective.
And did they ever tell you'd got one of those messages?
No, no. Just general, just general.
And how many years did you do that job?
About 3 years.
3 years, that's a long time.
Yeah.
And how does that work in the day? Do you go and sit down and then you're 8 hours listening to Morse code?
Yep. When we were beginning the course, we went to Trowbridge and we were on Salisbury Plain. I don't know if you know about Salisbury Plain, but it's mud. And it was all dotted out with little army huts. And these army huts were fitted up with headphones. And I can't send Morse. We were not taught to send. We were only taught to receive.
Yes.
You see. But it was incessant. You were, every hour of the day, you were listening to Morse code until the Morse was just like somebody speaking plain English.
Do you think you could still, if you heard Morse code now?
I wouldn't be able to take it over, I don't think, because you forget. It's 75 years ago, but I do know the Morse code right through. Still, I could tell you.
Give you a couple of hours and you'd be back there.
Possibly. I don't know, because you've got to hear the Morse and make it understand that it's saying E, F, G, whatever.
Yes.
I don't know if I could still do that, but I still know the Morse code right through. You know, you just, I could write it all down for you. But whether I could receive it like that,
yes,
I don't know.
Yes,
and of course, I can't hear anymore anyway.
I bet it would slip back quite quickly.
Possibly would.
Something that's part of your life like
that. It's just like somebody talking in a different language to you, if you like.
Yes. When you could start telling your family about that, they must have been fascinated by the idea.
I don't think they were. I don't think they could care less.
Really? Well, they're all here today. Who have you got here today?
It's got all that they do, yes.
So who have you got with you today?
I've got two daughters and granddaughter.
Granddaughter
and son-in-law and
great-granddaughter.
And a great-granddaughter.
Yes.
So that's nice. Be lots of generations of the family together. Have you got to meet some of the people you used to work with?
I have met the odd one white person. When the Duchess of Cornwall came to visit, I met one then.
Quick word. I shunt round and speak to your daughter. Can you just tell me who you are, please?
Margot Baker.
And do you remember when your mum could finally tell you what she did?
Yeah, I dispute what she said. We were fascinated.
It must have been a shock after all that time to find out what she did.
Yeah, she's very clever. She plays her part down quite a bit.
And how did you find out?
I think we sort of heard it on the telly, like my mum said. But then she sort of explained a bit to us, but she still doesn't really tell you the whole story. I think she still feels that there's certain parts that you're not meant to discuss still.
And it's lovely to have the whole family here to see it, to see what it was.
We've come to see, because she's now got the brick in the wall, we've come to see that.
Great, thank you.
So what did you do here?
I wasn't at Bletchley Park, I was at Chicksand.
Ah, and what did you do there?
I was a wireless operator.
Ah, okay. So it was a lot of concentration.
Yes, it did. You see, we never knew what we were doing. We never had any feedback over whatever happened. So at times it could be a trifle boring.
I bet, yeah. How long did you do it for?
Nearly 4 years.
Crikey. So were you in the WAF?
Mm.
And so did you stay billeted with lots of other WAFs somewhere?
Yes, we lived in huts.
Yeah.
Of about possibly 20 people, 20 girls, and that was very exciting as well.
But how did you get any sleep?
Well, we worked round the clock, you see, and that they more or less lived and slept within the group, because it wouldn't work otherwise. You couldn't have people coming and going all the time.
And you can't talk to anybody that you don't work with about the work, can you? So,
oh, I had to sign the official
Secrets Act.
Yeah. No, my parents never knew what I was doing. My father thought I was just wasting my time.
What was that like for you? Was it hard that he didn't know?
He would have loved to have known, because he would have been very, very interested. But you see, we didn't know until we got to Chicksand what we were going to do. We'd done a wireless course, learning the Morse code, but he didn't tell us what for.
And then I shouldn't think you knew a great deal about it, even when you were doing it.
No, I didn't. No, because it was all in code. And as I say, there was no feedback at all. It all came here to Bletchley. And again, there was no feedback.
You get feedback now, though, of course. What's it like when you come back now?
Well, we get a magazine regularly about all the updates and everything else. I mean, things have changed so much between then and now. It's a different world altogether.
When did you start to get a sense of how important it was, what you'd done, what you've been part of?
Well, it was just tiny little bits of things that leaked out. Like, this was known as Station X. Then you began to sort of wonder about Station X, and then some tiny bit would come out, sort of thing. But we weren't told about anything, really. It was
neat to know, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So do you remember telling your husband what you'd done during the war?
Well, the incredible thing, he was doing exactly as I was, but he was mobile. I didn't meet him till after the war. And during the war, we were stationed at Blackpool for a very short time, and I went to see Rosalie, the Total Futures. And she said, "You won't meet your husband for a very long time, but he's doing what you're doing." Well, I didn't know what I was doing.
How did she know then?
Well, I do not know.
That's amazing.
It is. And then I was trained as a nurse after that, you see. I was on a midwifery course and was invited to a dance where he was stationed. All those years later.
How long after the war was this?
That would be about 6 years.
Wow.
After the war.
I shouldn't think you told each other what you'd been doing.
Well, he knew what I'd been doing, but we never discussed it. And even up to his death, we never discussed it. I only knew from photographs of him being in India and the Far East, and they use the big mobile lorries as their office, sort of thing. But it was something we never ever discussed. It was still secret. My son's extremely interested in all these things, and now the young people just don't want to know about it at all. It's a different world.
I think that war is passing out of living memory now.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
And that's a shame, isn't it? Because I don't think people realise how frightening it was.
Well, I mean, as far as we're concerned, it's over and a good thing. But if you mention Bletchley Park to a youngster, they haven't got a clue what you mean. They think it's just an ordinary park that you wander around.
We're trying to change that. Can I talk to you as well?
Sure, yeah.
So your mother worked at Chicksands.
Chicksands,
so
yes.
When did you find out about this?
Well, I guess when I was at school in my teenage years, once or twice my parents mentioned the word Chicksands. Well, I think that was probably after the first books had been published about this place, and it was less of a secret. It's clear that my father had some knowledge of Y Service. Would never ever say what it was. His story was he actually landed with an RAF ground unit at Normandy on the 7th of June, not the 6th of June. And these RAF ground units would follow the army to the front line quite closely. And his story was that they would liaise with the army in order to call up the rocket-firing typhoons to destroy German tanks. It occurred to me recently that's a simple cover story. It's kind of romantic, it's exciting. I suspect what they were doing with their radio truck, he was in charge of a 3-ton Bedford radio truck with big aerials. I suspect what they were doing was following the army front line, still listening to the Germans. The Germans were retreating. The German signals by then would not have the power to reach England to be intercepted. So I'm assuming it was a mobile intercept unit. And they were simply receiving these signals and then relaying them back here. This is a surmise on my part. I'm speculating.
Well, it must be so fascinating for you to the way that they met and they were both doing something quite similar.
Exactly, yes.
But by coincidence, by the sounds of it.
Well, yeah, it's coincidence, but bearing in mind tens of thousands of people work for Y Service in the end. Okay, it's still coincidence, but it's not such a strange coincidence, actually. But the thing that's impressive, they never ever spoke about it at home. And
that must be more frustrating than anything for you.
But it is, because my dad died.
You want to know, don't you?
Dad died about 40 odd years ago, but he left behind some little black and white snaps. He took the Brownie 127.
So did he die before the secrecy was lifted?
It's just, the first books were just being published at about that time. And
one of the early times you realised was when we went to that reunion at Chicksands and we were going up the stairs.
Yeah.
And you were surprised at what you were reading and hearing.
Oh yes. The Chicksands reunions are brilliant, and that really was quite a centre. But no, my dad left some little black and white snaps from his journey from Normandy through France, Belgium, Holland into Germany, with places written on the back but not dates. So I've been trying to recreate that. Clearly they were following the British and Polish forces up through.
And do you pepper your mum with questions about what she was doing as well?
Well, yes, because years ago for U3A she wrote a 4-page piece on her life and times, particularly the Chicksands. I read this with great interest. And ever since then, just in casual conversation, some new snippet would come up. And I kept saying, you didn't tell me that before. Let's ask some more. So it's now about 14 or 15 pages, which I've typed up. And I offered it to the historian here at Bletchley. And he came out to interview Mum a couple of years ago. And I asked his permission to do a video recording of him interviewing Mother. And that's on the Bletchley website. So there's a link to it. But it's those little domestic snippets of everyday life during those times I find absolutely fascinating. Look, where are your gongs?
Oh, here comes out the medals. So what have we here?
It's a defence medal and a 3945. So you'll notice most of the veterans here are wearing those too, at least.
And you've got your Bletchley Park commemorative badge.
That came from Gordon Brown, yes. Prime Minister. Yes.
He will insist on these being worn, and I feel a real punk.
Wear them with pride, please. Thank you so much for sharing your memories.
Can you just tell me who you are and what you did at Bletchley Park?
Well, when I was at Bletchley Park, my name was Margaret Broughton Thompson, and I came straight here when I joined the Wrens. So I came here as a Wren, and I worked in the Newmanry on the Colossus machines.
Wow, that's, as we subsequently found out, an incredibly important job. What exactly were you doing?
Well, it's very hard to say because, you see, we were sworn to secrecy. for life, literally. And we never thought we would ever need the information again. And when they finally rebuilt a Colossus, and some of us came to see it switched on by the Duke of Kent, we all looked at it. It looked terribly familiar. Nobody could remember what we did. We could all remember little bits, because you had to sort of service the machine all the time, switching this and plugging in that, and we were on our feet all the time working, which was very, very tiring, because it was always by electric light, because the windows were blacked out, and it was a very hard floor. It also got very warm. Well, that was all right in perhaps in midwinter, 2 in the morning, but it wasn't so good at other times, you know. And we were just doing it all the time, but we never, ever knew any result of what we were doing.
And did you have any idea how important it was?
Well, I suppose partly. I mean, we knew the entire place was concerned with code breaking, and we were a little tiny bit of it. But beyond that, we didn't really know. And once you came out of that building, you never said a word to anybody, I mean, including the people you might have worked with all night or all day or whatever.
That must have been quite difficult.
Well, I think you got used to it in the end, but it was quite difficult when your parents said, well, what on earth are you doing? You've joined the Revenge, you're not by the sea, you're not with sailors, you know, which was a disappointment, of course. That was what we joined for. But we couldn't say anything. But my father made up his own mind that I was doing something to do with radar. So he once said to me about radar, I think you know more about this than you're prepared to say. So I thought, oh, that's what he's like. I thought, well, I can't tell him. So I put on a frightened innocent voice and I said, radar? I don't know about radar. Which, of course, had the required, you know, effect.
Yes.
So he said, ho, ho, ho. But I was always simply sad that both my parents died long before it became public. I never could tell them.
Yes.
But it was such a shock when it did, because we honestly didn't think it ever would.
And how long ago was it that it was declassified? And
well, it was about 33 or 34 years after the end of the war. 1970-something, I can't remember the date.
So, and it's a long time to keep that sort of information to yourself, isn't it?
Well, by that time, I think I was so used to it, you see, because it was at the beginning it was more difficult, I think.
Yes.
But I used to meet a group of friends from here in London once a year, and we never ever mentioned work at all. We nattered away about what we did when we were off duty, one thing and another, you know.
You told me that you were nearly sick when you heard about it.
I was. Well, I wasn't looking at television. I was busy doing something. My husband was looking at some programme I wasn't remotely interested in. But I just glanced up at some point, and at that moment, there was a picture of the mansion, and a man was talking about what went on here. And I just shrieked, no, 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 you see, at the television. He thought I'd gone mad. I mean, he didn't know what I'd say. And my entire inside turned over, and I was very nearly physically sick.
They drummed it into you that much.
It was a shock, you know, that somebody was doing this. It was appalling, terrible. He should be immediately shot.
And is the area where you worked still here, right?
No, they demolished the whole thing as soon as the war ended. Because over that away, where the now is the Museum of Computing, it went for a long, long way, more and more huts, and they were still building more when the war ended. Because this Colossus machine was a great success. It did what they'd hoped it would do.
Yes, yes.
So they were building more as fast as they could. When I came here, there were just 2 in operation. By the end of the war, there were 10.
Wow.
And of course, you see, they were so huge, you couldn't build it somewhere and carry it into a building.
No, it had to be.
So you had to build a building around it. So they were still doing that when the war ended.
And how is it coming back to an event like this?
Well, it's very strange, but it's all so enormously different. And of course, we never went into any of these other buildings, ever. You only ever went into the one we worked in. Yes. And I mean, you saw people piling out of other buildings when you'd finished your watch and piling into your rooms, and what they were doing, having the biggest idea.
And where were you living?
Well, the Admiralty took over the 7 largest houses in the area. We were in the largest, which was Woburn Abbey.
Yes.
We lived there and we came in and out by bus. But we were very marooned, really, because, I mean, the civilians and people who were close by had all sorts of out-of-work activities. And because we couldn't join in any of that, because the only way we could get out there was on the bus.
Yes.
So I enjoyed it because I like country life and things like that. But we were very crowded in. I and my particular friends lived in a cabin which would have been probably a maid's bedroom just under the roof. But it wasn't very big. It had one small window. And there were 8 of us in there. Because we all slept in double-decker bunks, and they managed to sort of fit in 4. Luckily, we all got on together, or it would have been sheer hell.
And how long were you here for?
Well, it wasn't all that long. We came in, my batch, we came in 1944. So we had all of that, and we came through 1945 until the war ended, when our section closed down and we had to go off and do other things.
You talked about when you were in London meeting up with some of the girls you were working with. And do you still get to see any of them?
Hopefully. I might see 2 today. One has died. One's in a home with dementia. Another one's in a nursing home. So,
but there's one that you may see today.
One had said she was definitely coming. She lives in London and her husband still drives and will bring her down. The other one is in a home, but she's hoping she might get here. But I don't know, it's a bit doubtful.
Relive those early days in the Wrens.
But we were all Wrens together, and it was, which we loved.
Can I just ask, what's your name, please?
My name's Gabriella Mortimer. This is my mother-in-law.
What do you think of the story?
It's amazing, actually. It's even more amazing that actually she allowed her son, my husband, to marry a German. Which is lovely, and it's just absolutely incredible. And when I say my mother-in-law's coming to visit, or we're going to Bletchley Park, and she was one of the Bletchley veterans, everybody is just astounded and knows the enormity of it. And at the time, it was the breakthrough, and nobody really realised it. So, yes, it is a huge honour to come here and to meet some of Maggie's friends.
It's a fascinating story because it's a secret story, isn't it? You all like secrets. And did she talk about it much?
No, Maggie doesn't really talk about it very much, but I do know about certain aspects of it, about when she first found out, and they were sworn to secrecy. It was drummed into them, and she does recall very vividly how when she first found out, and it was absolutely shocking, because in those days, you know, a secret. It's a secret, not everybody talking willy-nilly about indiscretions or whatever,
yes.
Which is happening nowadays with lots of celebrities.
I talked to quite a few of these ladies, and it seems that when you keep something secret for that long, it is very difficult to talk about. It's because...
You forget, don't you? I mean, what's the point of your brain holding on to the information if you're never, ever going to need it?
Yes, yes.
So it goes.
And I think you put up walls, don't you, to...
I think perhaps you do. I mean, you know, most secrets, you know they won't be secret forever, so you can mull over them in your mind even if you don't talk about them. But there was no point.
Yes.
It's never going to come out, and that was it.
Thanks to the paid and volunteer staff, visitors and veterans who took part in this podcast. To find out more, go to bletchleypark.org.uk. You can follow Bletchley Park on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. This podcast is produced for the Bletchley Park Trust by MC Fontaine and Catherine White and supported by Audio Boom. If you like this podcast, don't be shy. Write us a ripping review on iTunes. Thanks for listening, and we'll have more decrypts from the home of the Codebreakers next month.